coming right up on the hour of 7 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland, heard at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM in Hood River, the Dalles and the Gorge, 100.7 FM in Corvallis and Albany, and on the web at kboo.fm. My name's Diane. This is Early Morning Gumbo. Hope you'll tune in each weekday morning to folk music at 5:30, from 5:30 until 7, and stay tuned now for the KBOO Morning News.
Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, October 25th, 2005. I'm Becca Bartleson. Coming up on this morning's news, Oregon Trail School District teachers are going on strike. Civil rights leader Rosa Parks has died at the age of 92, just weeks before the 50th anniversary of the historic bus boycott she inspired. In Iraq, Baghdad's Palestine Hotel, the one where foreign journalists often stay, has come under heavy attack, and the results of the referendum are final. Iraqis have ratified the Constitution. Portland area weather today, cloudy with morning rain developing, highs in the 50s and low 60s, windy on the coast. Tonight, rains, lows in the 40s, snow at higher elevations. The state's first teacher strike since 1999 moved closer to reality. The teachers in the Oregon Trail School District east of Portland were at strike at 6 a.m. Tuesday if they didn't get a new contract. Sticking points include salary, health benefits, paid leave, employee discipline, working conditions, and the length of the contract. Last-ditch talks began Monday afternoon and were to continue right up to the strike deadline. Stephen Kenny, a spokesman for the Oregon Education Association, said he didn't know if the negotiating teams and two mediators were making progress late Monday. Even if an agreement is reached, the more than 4,200 students in the district will still miss a day of school because educators need time to notify parents about the development. The Y East Education Association, which represents 216 people, and the district began negotiating in April 2004. By December, the teachers asked for the help of a state mediator. In June of 2005, the district declared an impasse. If the teachers follow through with the strike, they will become only the second school district in Oregon to twice walk off the job. Last November, voters overwhelmingly approved a ballot measure that gave officials the choice of either paying compensation to landowners when a regulation lowers the value of their properties or waive the regulation. But last week, a Marion County judge ruled Measure 37 is unconstitutional. At least 2,000 land use claims have been filed since November. No money has been paid out yet because a compensation fund has not been established. Opponents of the ballot measure contend it would cause the law to unravel. Supporters of the measure argue that Oregon's law was unfair to property owners. Clackamas County has stopped accepting more Measure 37 claims or processing any current claims until the issue is decided by the Oregon Supreme Court. County Councilor Steve Lonsonberry said land use waivers have been approved are void for now. At the state level, Lane Shetterly, director of the State Land Conservation and Development Department, said the agency will process claims against the state, but with advisories to applicants, then an opinion has been issued. People who already have waivers, he said, should see a lawyer. The Northwest Biofuels Car Show and Conference was held at the Expo Center in Portland this past weekend. The conference showed the conversion to biofuels has already been made in many areas of the Pacific Northwest. KBOO's Maya Kim reports.
Are you worried about high gas price, peak oil, or global warming? Or do you think the war on Iraq is because of oil? Many people at the Northwest Biofuels Car Show and Conference say people can make positive changes using biofuels. Andrea Lewis is an organizer of the event.
Today's event was designed to really get the information out to people about what biofuels were, to remove the myths, and just allow the opportunity for the conversion in their personal lives and then also at a higher level to change.
One of the panelists was Brian Jamison, who is with the Go Biodiesel Cooperative in Portland. He says he's a petroleum addict, but a few years ago, he kicked his addiction.
There's about 90 members in the co-op. We make our own fuel. You look at it, maybe 2 to 4 hours of work in exchange for biodiesel that's produced locally on a team effort at $2.25 a gallon. We may actually be able to get that price down a little bit.
Michael Johnson is with a small directory company called Redirect Guide. He says the company has used the biodiesel car to distribute to their guys for 1.5 years, but they have never had a problem at all.
We use our biodiesel Jetta. We burn B100 to distribute our guides all around Portland, Vancouver. It is very, very safe. It's biodiesel is non-toxic, so it's much safer than using normal petroleum diesel. We put it directly into a brand new Jetta. No conversion required. Just drove it off the lot and filled it up with B100 right away.
Thomas Edicott is with Sequential Biofuels, which is a biofuel marketing and distribution company in Oregon.
Sequential has taken the next step, which is to actually go to full-blown retail stations. And our demand has been large enough. Our support in the market is great enough. This is an artist rendering, but we will open the first biofuels retail station, Sequential branded, in Eugene. Should be online about March. We'll offer blends of biodiesel with diesel, 5, 20, and 99% biodiesel. And if no one beats us to the punch, we'll have the first 85% ethanol pump open to the public in the state at this station. Very accessible from I-5, very visible, right next to an Exxon and right across the street from a Shell.
State Representative Jackie Dingfelder says biofuels are an important enough issue that every level of the government in Oregon says we need to work together on this.
The bills that I co-sponsored, they were written to attempt to sort of promote 6 main goals. The first one was to provide incentive to produce biofuels actually in Oregon, because we don't produce a lot of biofuels here. And this is the one piece of legislation that did pass. And so it's very exciting, because this actually may help. And we already have actually a facility that's going online here to start producing more biofuels at a larger scale, and that was to expand a property tax exemption for biodiesel production facilities.
One of the bills that did not pass was to give incentives to farmers to grow feedstock for biofuels in Oregon. Organizers hope that we will have a bigger Northwest Biofuels Car Show and Conference next year. I'm Mia Kim, KBOO News.
A motorist is being sought after a bicyclist was struck and killed following a crash on an overpass over Interstate 5 in Everett, Washington. Police Lieutenant Ted Olufsen said the man fell from a bicycle while heading west on 112th Street and was hit by a car during rush hour traffic last night. Olufsen says the driver stopped, walked toward the fallen bicyclist, then got back into his car and drove away. The bicyclist died on the way to a hospital. President Bush said yesterday that the investigation into the outing of an undercover CIA operative was very serious. This comes as the special prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, appears to be close to indicting two top White House officials, Karl Rove and Scooter Libby, in the case. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois made the statement yesterday from the Senate floor.
And to minimize the possibility of someone being indicted for perjury overlooks the obvious. What is at stake here? What is at issue here in this investigation involving Valerie Plame is the fact that this woman was a career employee of the Central Intelligence Agency in a covert status, which meant people didn't know what she was doing. And that gave her entree and opportunity that others didn't have. So protecting her identity was an important part of her service to this nation. There are many just like her who risk their lives every day for America to make it safer, to uncover potential acts of terrorism before they occur. And so when her husband, a former ambassador, put an article in the newspaper critical of the Bush administration for overstating the reasons we were going to invade Iraq, someone, according to columnist Robert Novak, two people in the White House, came forward to out her identity. They did that for the most venal political reasons. to punish her and her husband for speaking out against the administration. Now, that is a crime, to out the identity of a CIA agent. Who created this crime? It was a crime created by President Bush's father, who former head of the CIA, who was so enraged that someone had written a book disclosing the identity of a CIA agent, which he believed resulted in their death, that he called on Congress to pass a law to say that if anybody disclosed that identity, they should be held responsible for it. That's what's at the heart of this.
Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois commenting yesterday on the floor of the Senate regarding the investigation into the outing of an undercover CIA operative. Notes in the hand of federal prosecutors suggest the chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney first heard of the covert CIA officer central to a leak investigation from Cheney himself, the New York Times reported. The newspaper said notes of a previously undisclosed June 12, 2003 conversation between I. Lewis Libby and Cheney appeared to differ from Libby's grand jury testimony that he first heard of Valerie Plame from journalists. The newspaper identified its sources only as lawyers who are involved in the case. Miller said Libby spoke to her about Plame and her husband, Joseph Wilson, on three occasions, although not necessarily by name and without indicating he knew she was undercover. Libby's notes show that Cheney knew Plame worked at the CIA more than a month before her identity was publicly exposed by columnist Robert Novak. At the time of the Cheney-Libby conversation, Wilson had been referred to, but not by name, in the Times and on the morning of June 12, 2003, on the front page of the Washington Post. The Times reported that Libby's notes indicated Cheney got his information about Wilson from then-CIA Director George Tenet, but said there was no indication he knew her name. The notes also contained no suggestion that Cheney or Libby knew at the time of their conversation of Plame's undercover status or that her identity was classified. Disclosing the identity of a covert CIA agent can be a crime, but only if the person who discloses it knows the agent is classified as working undercover. The Times quoted lawyers involved in the case as saying they had no indication Fitzgerald was considering charging Cheney with the crime. But the paper said any efforts by Libby to steer investigators away from his conversation with Cheney might be viewed by a prosecutor as an attempt to impede the inquiry, which could be a crime. Rosa Parks passed away at her home in Detroit Monday night of natural causes. She was 92 and had been frail lately, making only limited public appearances. Parks, a Montgomery, Alabama seamstress, earned the title of Mother of the Civil Rights Movement and was thrust into the spotlight and the history books when she refused to give up her seat to a white man on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama in 1955. She was arrested, thrown in jail, and fined $14. But the act of defiance sparked a movement that would win blacks in this country equal rights under the law. Parks would say 3 decades later she had no idea that her actions would lead to the 381-day Montgomery bus boycott, led by the Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr., then a little-known young Baptist minister. King later earned the Nobel Peace Prize for his work. At a ceremony 45 years later, Alabama Governor Dawn Siegelman said her refusal to give up her seat was an act that changed this state and our nation forever. It eventually led to a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that forced the integration of the city transportation system. U.S. Representative John Conyers of Michigan remembers Parks as soft-spoken with a determination that was quite fierce. After the incident, Parks and her husband were forced to leave Alabama for Michigan because of threats, harassment, and because they couldn't find work. She worked as an aide in Conyers' office between 1965 and 1988. Conyers said he remembers Parks as an almost saint-like person. The mayor of Montgomery, Alabama, said he regrets that Parks didn't live to see the 50th anniversary of what many view as the start of the civil rights movement. December 1st will mark 50 years since the day Parks refused to give her bus seat up. A Los Angeles judge ruled yesterday that Stanley Tookie Williams, a street gang leader and the Nobel Peace Prize nominee, will die by lethal injection on December 13th. Williams, who admitted, found the notorious Crips street gang while a teenager. He maintains his innocence in the 4 1979 murders that landed him on death row, has exhausted nearly a quarter century of appeals, and will be likely executed unless he wins clemency from Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Superior Court Judge William Pounders rejected a request for another delay by attorneys for the 51-year-old Williams, one of America's best-known death row inmates who in October lost a bid to have the U.S. Supreme Court review his case. Schwarzenegger is aware of Williams' case but has not made a decision on clemency. Williams argues that prosecutors kept blacks off the jury. He was the subject of a 2004 TV movie, Redemption, the Stan Tookie Williams story, starring Oscar-winning actor Jamie Foxx. California, which has more than 600 people on death row, has executed 11 people, 8 of them white men, since the death penalty was reinstated in the late 1970s. Williams' name was in the ruling, running for the Nobel Peace Prize for his peace work in inner-city neighborhoods. He has written children's books and has been a consistent advocate against violence. A report released by the U.S. Justice Department over the weekend reveals that the prison population in California and around the country continues to increase. FSRN's Grace Turner reports.
After all, the purpose of a democracy is to make sure everybody participates in the process.
George Bush, speaking on the White House lawn, congratulates Iraqis on their recent elections. Just 1 week later, the U.S. Justice Department releases a report confirming that our democratic government still holds the dubious title of number one incarcerator in the world. The report states that at the end of last year, the number of inmates in federal, state, local, and other prisons totaled nearly 2.3 million people. A shocking figure considering China, the second highest incarcerator, has four times more citizens, yet half as many prisoners.
The U.S. prison system continues to expand at dangerously incremental rates, and the prisons are filling up with poor people of color.
Judy Greenspan is a board member of California Prison Focus, a statewide organization dedicated to protecting the rights of prisoners. African Americans, as just 13% of the U.S. population, are overrepresented in prisons, topping 41% of U.S. inmates. Despite a decrease in the amount of violent crime over the past 10 years, federal incarceration facilities are now 40% over capacity. Texas operates the largest state prison system with 168,000 inmates, followed closely by California.
It's a tremendous travesty and something that enrages anyone, or should enrage anyone, who is really for the human rights of all people. Prisoners have human rights. They deserve human rights. Poor people do not deserve to be locked up in prison because, you know, they can't make it in this totally, you know, dog-eat-dog, the rich, only the rich survive type of system.
Greenspan says law enforcement officials unfairly target low-income individuals and people of color. Members of California Prison Focus are encouraging people to push for alternatives to incarceration, like community rehabilitation centers and drug treatment facilities.
The main crime that people are being picked up for, the scapegoat, the reason is drug addiction. And it's something that should not be a crime. It's certainly a medical condition, and there are ways to treat it. There are many corporations in this country who make billions of dollars on the prison industrial complex. Some of the same companies that are making billions of dollars within the war in Iraq. So until we can really wrest control of the system from them, the prison system will continue to expand. Or until we can build a movement that is formidable enough to stand up to the likes of all of these multi-billion dollar companies.
10 states reported population increases of at least 5% during 2004, including Minnesota, Idaho, and Georgia. Alabama, Rhode Island, and New York were among the 11 states that saw a decrease. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Grace Turner.
According to the Daily News, Bush is facing the darkest days of his presidency. His associations say President Bush is frustrated, sometimes angry, and even bitter. With a seemingly uncontrollable insurgency in Iraq, the White House is bracing for political fallout from a grim milestone that could come any day, the combat death of the 2,000th American GI. Last week alone, 23 military personnel were killed in Iraq, and 5 were wounded yesterday in a relentless series of attacks across the country. This week could also bring a special prosecutor's decision that could shake the foundations of the Bush government. The president's top political aide, Karl Rove, and Vice President Cheney's right-hand man, Louis Scooter Libby, are at the center of a two-year criminal probe into the leak of a CIA agent's identity. Many Bush staffers believe indictments are likely. This from the Daily News website. The BBC is reporting that leading Tom DeLay has appeared in court for the first time since his indictment on money laundering and conspiracy counts. But the Texas court agreed to delay Mr. DeLay's arraignment or formal calling before court to answer the charges. Lawyers for the former House Majority Leader had asked the judge to postpone proceedings until a ruling on Mr. DeLay's bid for a new judge is heard. He is accused of breaking campaign finance laws, but denies the charges. DeLay is alleged to have laundered $190,000 in corporate contributions for use in Republican campaigns in Texas. State law forbids the use of corporate money for political campaigns. DeLay's lawyer argued that the sitting judge had contributed to a liberal organization which has printed derogatory T-shirts of Mr. DeLay. Judge Bob Perkins told him that he had not seen or bought the T-shirt and had contributed to MoveOn.org only ahead of last year's presidential election. He said he would defer the proceedings and Mr. DeLay's request would be considered. DeLay did not speak during the brief court session and was not called on to make a plea. According to the New York Times, the Bush administration is seeking an exception for the CIA to the ban on torturing insofar as it applies to detainees. The confrontation with the Senate over the handling of detainees has been intensifying. The White House is insisting that the Central Intelligence Agency be exempted from a proposed ban on abusive treatment of suspected al-Qaeda militants and other alleged terrorists held by the government. Ben Bernanke was chosen yesterday by President Bush to be next chairman of the Federal Reserve, the most influential economic policy job in the world. If approved by the Senate, Bernanke would succeed Alan Greenspan, who has spent 18 years at the helm and is expected to step down January 31st. Bush called Greenspan a legend, and Bernanke promised to continue the chairman's policies. Greenspan called Bush's choice a distinguished appointment. Ben comes from a superb economic academic credentials and important insights into the ways our economy functions. It was the third time in as many years that Bush has turned to the 51-year-old Bernanke for a sensitive economic post. The president named him to the Fed board in 2002, then made him chairman of the president's Council of Economic Advisers earlier this year. The nomination comes at a difficult time for Bush. His approval ratings are sagging, his choice of Harriet Myers for the Supreme Court is under attack, and his top political advisor, Karl Rove, is a central figure in the investigation of who leaked the name of an undercover CIA officer. The initial reaction to Bernanke was positive. The U.S. military says it sent 10 communications teams equipped with satellite phones and other equipment to Florida and had 8 helicopters available for the potential evacuation of citizens in the region. The North Carolina National Guard airlifted 12 patients from a Key West hospital. Other National Guard units were prepared to bring food, water, and other supplies to residents in the Florida Keys if flooding made the single road out of there impassable. Altogether, there were 117 National Guard helicopters and 15 aircraft from 29 states that were available for search and rescue missions and to transport assessment teams through the region. At its peak, the task force had 22,000 military personnel from all services deployed to support Katrina and Rita relief operations. DOD's aviation support in the affected area included 169 helicopters and 38 fixed-wing aircraft. An assassination in a West Bank refugee camp could complicate Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas' effort to demobilize Palestinian armed groups. FSRN's Manar Jabrin reports from the West Bank.
Two Palestinian fighters were killed Sunday night when Israeli troops opened fire on a house in the Tul Karim refugee camp. Lu'ay al-Sa'di, a leader of Al-Quds Brigades, the armed wing of the Islamic Jihad movement in the West Bank, was killed during the ensuing gun battle. Islamic Jihad has vowed to avenge the killing of al-Sa'di. Another Islamic Jihad operative was killed in the attack and dozens of civilians were arrested. During last week's visit to the United States, President Mahmoud Abbas vowed to disarm the resistance groups operating within Palestinian territory. Nasser Juma from the Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, the group that Abbas has promised to disarm, said assassinations do not help truce efforts.
Israel did not commit to any of the agreements. This is driving the country into more security deterioration and more violence and bloodshed, which does not prepare the ground for truce that will advance the diplomatic efforts.
The ongoing Israeli practice of targeted assassinations could pose a serious threat to the efforts of the Palestinian Authority to disarm the resistance and absorb them in its security and other departments. For FSRN from IMEMC.org in Palestine, I am Manar Jubin.
Three suicide bombers stage a coordinated attack on a Baghdad hotel complex used by foreign journalists yesterday, killing at least 15 people. The bombings, at dusk in the front of rolling television cameras and guaranteed global media coverage, broke a relative lull in insurgent violence over the past 2 weeks. Video footage showed a bomber slam a car into heavy defenses around the concrete towers of the Palestine and Sheraton hotels, blasting a path for another in a cement truck, who struck 5 minutes later, according to Reuters. The cement truck, which appeared to be blocked from reaching the base of one of the hotels, exploded close to a U.S. Bradley armored vehicle on guard duty, sending flames and dust high into the air across the city center. There were no initial reports of U.S. military casualties, a U.S. military spokesman said. Recent media reports have focused attention on the fact that the U.S. death toll in Iraq is just three short of the headline figure of 2,000. A U.S. military statement gave a different account, saying a combination of rockets and car bombs targeted the hotels. Oil exports from Iraq have been completely halted by a combination of attacks and bad weather, according to the BBC. Four sabotage attacks brought exports from the northern Iraq to a halt on Sunday, and officials warn the damage may take a month to repair. The problem worsened on Monday when a pipeline carrying crude to the Turkish port of Ceyhan was hit at an attack. Meanwhile, bad weather has prevented tankers from loading at terminals in the south, agents French Press said. Ahead of the stoppage, exports from the south of the country have been as high as 1.6 million barrels a day. In the north, Sunday's attacks hit a gathering center for at least four wells in the country, around 40 miles west of the city of Kirkuk. Yesterday, three mortars hit a set of oil and gas pipelines that have already been hit on Thursday, setting at least 16 oil pipelines on fire, according to the news agency AFP. According to a Hong Kong Special Administrative Region press release, the Hong Kong government has issued a decree restricting public access to the area around the venue for the WTO's December ministerial conference. The restricted zone includes both land and sea and will extend approximately 1 square kilometer around the Hong Kong Convention and Exhibition Center. Hong Kong police will issue accreditation badges to the approximately 11,000 participants, including delegates, press members, and civil society representatives. Badges will also be issued to conference support staff and residents living within the cordoned off area. Members of the public wishing to gain access to the zone for justifiable purposes may apply for a permit with the local police. Hong Kong government officials say the security measure is needed due to police intelligence reports indicating that large numbers of local and foreign protesters will conduct demonstrations during the summit. A government spokesman said, to safeguard public safety and public order in the conference venue and its surroundings, the administration considers it a necessity to set up a closed area. The public order ordinance was issued by Hong Kong Chief Executive Donald Tsang, who will have the authority to similarly close any other area in Hong Kong if he believes it is necessary to protect public safety and maintain public order. The ministerial conference will be held from 13th to 18th of December. Access restrictions will come into effect at 6 p.m. on the 12th of December and will remain in place on a 24-hour basis until 5 a.m. on December 19th. British Member of Parliament George Galloway has denied new claims that he profited from Saddam Hussein's oil for food program and lied about it under oath. The U.S. Senate committee claims the anti-war MP lied to its members when he testified in Washington in May. The committee says it has seen the bank records linking Mr. Galloway and his wife with Iraqi government vouchers. In a statement, Galloway said he has not made a penny from any deal with Iraq. His wife has previously issued denials. However, the committee chairman, Norm Coleman, said documents it had uncovered were the smoking gun. Galloway appeared before a U.S. Senate committee on the 17th of May. The former Labor MP traveled to Washington after senators accused him of receiving credit to buy Iraqi oil. This from the BBC. This has been the KABU Morning News for Tuesday, October 25th, 2005. Chris Andre edited the news. KABU News volunteers and reporters produced and edited the tape. Kathleen Stevenson is the AM News Public Affairs Director and the engineer today. And I'm Becca Bartleson. Thanks for listening. We clear the air at 90.7 FM Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Portland area weather today, cloudy this morning, rain developing. Highs in the 50s and low 60s, windy on the coast. Tonight, rain, lows in the 40s, snow at high elevations. Coming up this morning on KABU, at 7:30, Joe Uris and A. Proctor host Talk Radio. At 9 on Between the Covers, host Ed Goldberg speaks with David Rakoff, author of Don't Get Too Comfortable. At 9:30 on Words and Pictures, the guest is cartoonist and former Portlander Aaron Reiner, whose new graphic novel, Spiral Bound, was written for children but is being praised by adults. At 10, Aaron Ernst interviews Portlander David Woolman, author of A Left-Hand Turn Around the World, Chasing the Mystery and Meaning of All Things Southpaw. At 10:30 on Stage and Studio, Willamette Radio Workshop presents Frankenstein Radio Theater. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for listening.
For Tuesday, October 25th, 2005. Until midnight tonight, Tuesday, October 25th, Willamette Week is seeking nominations for the Skidmore Prize, which was established in 2004 to recognize outstanding community service. This year, four cash prizes of $3,000 will be awarded to Portlanders who currently work for local nonprofits in the fields of community, youth, health, and animals. To qualify, nominees must work full-time for the nonprofit, have been with the organization at least 1 year, be 35 years old or under, be committed and excited about their cause, and inspire and motivate others. Willamette Week asks that nominations be submitted through their website at www.wweek.com/Skidmore Prize. For non-web submissions, Willamette Week's main phone number is 503-243-2122. Today, the Oregonian announces the 2,000 U.S. soldiers' death in Iraq, which will probably be today. KABU listeners can join other Portland community members, including Gold Star families, military families, and veterans, to remember the lives of both U.S. soldiers and Iraqi civilians killed in the war. At Terry Trunk Plaza, that's at Southwest 3rd and Madison in downtown Portland, across from the Federal Building, the American Friends Service Committee will convene a vigil for the reading of the 2,000 names. At 6:30, those gathered will process to the waterfront to join a candlelight vigil for peace. For more information and to volunteer, contact Kelly Campbell, American Friends Service Committee, at 503-230-9427. The website is www.afsc.org/2000. or www.unitedforpeace.org. This reading is part of a nationwide series of events co-sponsored by the American Friends Service Committee and is listed on the KABU online community calendar. Heather Rogers, author of a new book called Gone Tomorrow, The Hidden Life of Garbage, will show a related short film at First Unitarian in downtown Portland this evening and will discuss the question, does the economy need garbage? Rogers will trace the history of garbage generation and disposal systems through the last two centuries and demonstrate the disturbing connections between modern industrial production, consumer culture, and the unhealthy garbage glut that our throwaway lifestyle is based on. This event is co-sponsored by the Economic Justice Action Group and the Unitarian Universalist Community for Earth of the First Unitarian Church of Portland. Rogers' presentation is tonight, October 25th, from 7 to 9 p.m., at the First Unitarian Church on Southwest 12th, downtown Portland, between Main and Salmon. $5 to $10 donation is requested, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. First Unitarian Ukraine's main phone number is 503-228-6389. This event is included in the online calendar at portland.indymedia.org. The KBOO Program Committee is running an evaluation of all KBOO's programs that air on Monday and Tuesday, 24 hours a day on those days, starting at 5:30 a.m. And the most important evaluations are those that come from you, the KBOO listeners. More information, including downloadable program evaluation forms, appear on KBOO's homepage at kboo.fm. This has been the KBOO Community Calendar on air for Tuesday, October 25th, 2005. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland for Oregon, USA.
KBOO's Program Committee wants your feedback. The committee is currently evaluating all programs on Monday and Tuesday. If you would like to review a program on either Monday or Tuesday, please call us during regular business hours of 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Ask the receptionist to send you an evaluation form. The KBOO business line is 503-231-8032. You can also find the form on our website, www.kboo.fm. Thanks for listening to KBOO. Tune in to KBOO this Thursday morning at 9:30 for a special hour-long press watch with host Teresa Mitchell. Her guest in studio will be Peter Phillips, director of Project Censored. They'll be talking about Censored 2006, the top 25 censored stories. That's Peter Phillips of Project Censored this Thursday at 9:30 a.m. on Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know.